People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio. This is Rodney Trudgeon, welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. And I'm very excited to tell you that the Rocky Horror Show is coming back to Cape Town. It was last year, 6-7 years ago in 2019. And the same person who played the role of Frankenfurter is back in that exact same role. And that's Craig Urbani, who's my guest today. And you know, Craig is a South African actor and musical performer, best known for his eponymous role in the stage musical The Buddy Holly Story from years ago in South Africa and also on the West End. But then he's done so many things. And most recently, I don't think anything could be more different, Craig, than Henry Higgins and Frankenfurter, or the captain in The Sound of Music.
The only thing that makes Higgins and Frankenfurter similar is the way they talk. They both speak very properly.
They do, indeed.
And I've got a great story about how Tim Curry found that accent, actually.
Do tell.
I saw a clip of him the other day. Shame, you know, a little older now, and you know he's had a stroke.
He looks terrible, actually.
But he was in very good spirits, and he was saying how he was playing the character with a German accent. And he said, and it was a complete disaster. And then I was sitting on the bus, and I heard a lady 2 seats in front of me say, "Do you have a house in town and a house in the country?" And he said, "That's exactly how I'm going to play it." So that's why he says, weighing 98 pines.
Pines.
And that's where he found that little inflection. I just thought it was so funny.
To found it so by so such accident, in
yes,
fact.
Yes,
yes. Are you doing that?
I can't do this part without hearing and seeing Tim Curry. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, because, you know, some people would say, no, you need to reinvent it and do your own spin of a character. But when something has been immortalized and preserved in aspect like Tim Curry's performance of Frankenfurter, I hear it in my mind's eye. I see it in my mind's eye. I play it hoping that I remind people of what he did.
And so, yet, yeah, you are yourself, because I remember when I saw you the last time.
Yes.
You have to be yourself.
In fact, when I saw myself, I thought I would be more like Tim Curry than I was.
So. Oh, okay. And I love that line where he says to Janet, "You must be very
proud of him.
That accent coming
it's
through
pride.
Again. So when you heard that they were going to restage it and you were offered the part again, were you happy? Was it a role that you loved?
I've loved it since I was 22 and standing on the stage with bleached white hair in a gold, well, I think it was a nappy, a kind of gold nappy shorts thing, because my first role ever in 92 was Rocky in the Rocky Horror Show. And I looked over at Jeremy Crutchley, who was doing a sterling job of Frankenfurter, and I thought, one day I hope I get to play.
Really? Did you? As long ago as that?
And I've been kind of playing it in my mind and in my lounge and in my car ever since. So when we did it in 2019, the Christopher Luscombe of the UK team came over, creative team. He came over to direct, and he said to me on day one, he said, "Well, you know, from the audition, I could tell that you had a sort of handle on him. So do it, and we'll talk." And after the first, before we got to lunch, he sort of came and went, "Okay, I can see that you've been doing this for some time in your head. Carry on."
Oh, so he didn't give you too many notes.
So he didn't give me too much. Yeah, you know, they are not set that they want him played with a British accent. Some actors have played him with an American accent. Some have mixed the accent. You know, he's an alien. You can kind of do whatever you want. But as I mentioned, I just see and hear Tim Curry. So I did my sort of emulation of Tim to a point with a bit of Craig mixed in there, and they said, "Okay, run with it. It feels right. It's in your bones kind of thing.
Yeah.
So right from 92 when I was 21 years old.
I was going to say Rocky's then played a part right through your life in a sense, because you were Rocky standing there in your underpants, whatever you see, your nappy,
yeah,
bleached hair and all that. And now, the great role.
And I played Brad.
Have you done Brad as well?
A little bit later, lovely Samantha Pio was my Janet. And in that same production, which was at the Victory Theatre and which started off here at Artscape, which was then called the Nico Milan, in 1992, we started here. Then we went there and we ran for a long time in Orange Grove at the Victory Theatre, which was kind of a perfect venue for it. And it was my first job. And then later in that same production, I moved to the role of Brad, played Brad, which I did at the Baxter and in Durban. Not for a long time. And then Frank. So it is a full circle.
It's very much a full circle. Definitely. Just because I mentioned it in the introduction, where did Buddy fit in all this? When you started in 1982 as Rocky, was that pre-Buddy?
That's pre-Buddy.
Oh, so when it really was the beginning.
It was my first job. I'd come out of Rhodes University and I did a packed schools tour. And then while I was doing the packed schools tour, I got a call from my agent and they said, we want you to go to the Victory Theatre in Orange Grove and prepare a rock song and go sing for Brad. We think you'd be a good Brad. So I went in there and that's how that happened. When I auditioned for Buddy, which was in 1993, I still had the bleached hair. And I remember Pierre van Pletzen looking at me and saying, what's with your hair? And I said, no, this is not my color. It's for a role.
Okay. But Craig, Buddy was a huge thing for you, wasn't it? It was massive.
Incredible. I mean, yeah. Buddy, I had no idea. I literally went in, as I say, with my bleached hair and sat down. And I remember phoning my dad and saying, what did Buddy Holly sing? And he said to me, oh boy, that. And I was like, oh, I know these songs. I know all these songs. And I said, Dad, what are the chords? And he said, well, everything was kind of A, D, and E. It was rock and roll. And I could sort of play a little bit of it. So I went in and played, and I had a natural sort of sense of rhythm because I'm a drummer. I was a drummer when I was younger. So they were worried because of my age, because it's quite a big part. So they did have two of us playing it. And in London and around the world, they always have a main buddy and an alternate buddy. Whereas here, they cast two of us to share the role. But it, you know, little did I know, I was 22 when I auditioned, 23 when I started doing it, that I didn't know that the sound designer who had come out from the UK had phoned back to Paul Elliott, the producer, who recently passed, actually, wonderful man, and said, there's a young boy here, we need to bring him over. And I didn't know, thank goodness, because I was just doing me. I was just
and
doing
being
it,
and enjoying
loving
it.
Loving it. Yeah. I mean, it was such
what
a
good role again.
And the success of that show wasn't down purely to me or Terence Rage, the other buddy. It was really a collective thing. We had people like Paul Ditchfield in there, who's a legend. He played Norman Pitt. We had the late, great Greg Plotz playing the bopper, who was just wonderful. And we had a few after that, Ashley Taylor, David Lee, Mike Huff, who all did a fantastic job. But we just had such a beautiful mix. Alan Swerdlow was in there. Jonathan Taylor came in later. Simon Jones. We had there was something happening that was very special. The Ditchfield ladies, Judy Ditchfield and Jocelyn Broderick were in there with us. And we all remember it so fondly. It was an extraordinary experience from the moment we kind of began. And then I think that came across the footlights and people went,
absolutely,
people went crazy
it did.
For it.
It did indeed. And your great big breakthrough, that really was. Talk about a breakthrough.
Yes, real springboard for me.
Another big breakthrough for the audience is the appearance of Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Show. An incredible entry. Mm. And I see, Craig, you've chosen that as your first piece of music, the Sweet
Trance. I thought it would be fitting to at least have one song from the show, and I thought, why not there?
And this is the main original with Tim Curry himself.
This is it.
How'd you do, I? See, you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down, because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung up by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Let me show you a rhyme and maybe play you a sign. You look like you're both pretty groovy. Or if you want something visual that's not too abysmal, we could take in an old Steve Reeves movie.
I'm glad we caught you at home. Could we use your phone? We're both in a bit of a hurry.
Right.
We'll just say where we are, then go back to the car. We don't want to be any worry.
Well, you got caught with a flat wheel. How about that? Well, babies, don't you panic. By the light of the night, it'll all seem all right. I'll get you a satanic mechanic. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Why don't you stay for the night?
Night.
Or maybe a bite.
Night.
I could show you my favorite obsession. I've been making a man with blonde hair and a tan, and he's good for relieving my tension. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Hey, I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. So, come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation. But maybe the rain is really to blame. So I'll remove the cause. But not the symptom.
What a fantastic song. What a fantastic entry, the sweet transvestite, the main moment in the Rocky Horror Show. Tim Curry there in the original production, the film production. And I'm talking to Craig Urbani on People of Note this week, and he is playing the role of Frankenfurter in Peter Turin's production, which opens next Saturday, the 4th of April at Theatre on the Bay. And we were saying, you spoke about the victory in Johannesburg, Craig. The Theatre on the Bay is kind of also ideal, isn't it? Because it needs to be intimate in a way. When we saw it in the Opera House, as grand as the Opera House is, it's not a Katz or a Phantom.
I agree.
So the Theatre on the Bay is going to be ideal.
I agree. I think Rocky Horror works better on stage in a more intimate setting.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And that's kind of, I think, what Richard O'Brien originally had in his mind. And when they first did the show live, it was in a smaller venue. I mean, look, it works because of the rock and roll music, and you can do it in a big way. But at the end of the day, the story holds for me better if you can just do it a little more intimately. So I think Theatre on the Bay, and I actually got a glimpse of the set last night. We had our Zitz probe, and I got a glimpse of the set, and it looks fantastic. It's going to be wonderful there.
Oh, good. How does it feel coming on stage and singing that song in your fishnet stockings and lipstick and makeup? Is it a moment?
It's completely a moment. And I just remember standing behind the doors the last time we did it, standing there with the cloak, you know, hiding everything, concealing all the horror and magic that was about to be revealed as you go, I'm just a... And it's an incredible entrance. I think I've compared it to Velma Kelly's entrance in All That Jazz in Chicago. That when all the dancers are milling around and suddenly it just goes into that bap, 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 and she comes out of the stage in that pose. It's such a beautiful, powerful entrance, and I wait for it with such anticipation, as I think the audience does.
They do. But they've had lots to enjoy before then, because there's the wonderful Time Warp sequence, yes, as well as the one in the rain. What's
and
it
all
called?
The beautiful, there's a light over the Frankenstein.
That's right.
And the Brad and Janet, Damn It, Janet. And the Usherette song, which I think is a bit of genius. The music is so simple and so effective and so brilliant. So there's plenty to keep them entertained. And then once Frank comes on, of course, it's first the entrance and then the reveal of what this creature is wearing.
That's right.
Which is going to be very up and in their face.
At the Theatre on the Bay. Yeah. But you were also saying, we were discussing Frankenfurter as a person, and we have to remember that he's an alien, first of all.
Yes.
But as you say, one moment he's quite camp,
yes,
and then quite macho.
Part of what makes it such a gift, and that's why we were chatting earlier, and I said to you, I think most male musical theatre performers would love a stab at this because he's so unpredictable. You macho and grounded and rooted and earthy one second, and then you're light and camp and playful almost the next, and then you're quite villainous, and then he's sort of demure and the victim, and he flits between all of these emotions so quickly and so vastly. You know, it's fantastic. Yeah. And it's almost, there's no rules. The rules are, there are no rules. And that's what makes him such a gift and also a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Frankenfurter shouldn't be played as simply a sort of drag. I think he needs some of those earthy, guttural, manly moments. And that's the irony of him. That's the charm of this ridiculous character.
And also, I mean, the fact that you're clad in leather, apart from the fishnet stockings, chains and leather and things,
he
can be quite dangerous sometimes.
Absolutely.
You can be scared of him later on in the show.
Well, it's a Rocky Horror, you know. So the whole feel of the piece, I believe, and thankfully Stephen Stead, our director, feels the same, needs that B-grade horror movie feel. That's what it was, you know. That's what it's spoofing or paying tribute to, actually, is those B-grade horror movies. So when you're villainous, you must be villainous. And I think the idea is that he, certainly that opening shot in the movie when you just see his face and it's pale with the makeup and he looks like, there's an aspect of, oh, the baddie has arrived. You know, there is that aspect of
very much so.
And then it just sort of flips and when the camera pans up and you see him with the gloves in the lab, he's sort of all meek and demure and thank you for coming.
That's right. Complete contrast from what's just happened downstairs.
Exactly.
And then later on when things are getting a bit rough before the dance,
the floor show.
He really is quite nice. And I think he smoked.
Yes,
or in the film he smoked. He's vicious.
And they're busy eating Eddie, basically. He's sitting at a table eating one
Eddie.
Of the characters. Yeah.
Goodness me, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
But you wonder, I mean, it's what Frankenfurter is. So we say he's an alien. He comes from Transylvania, and he came down to Earth. I wonder, have you done much research into what it's all about?
I mean, I have. I've read whatever I could find, and I've watched interviews with Tim Curry and Richard O'Brien, and I mean, there's a lot of stories and ideas floating around it. But I think at the end of the day, Richard O'Brien just created this ridiculous, crazy piece,
a spoof on horror movies,
a spoof on the sort of B-grade horror films. And pushed the boundaries and stretched it a bit and said, well, let's be as outlandish and as crazy as we can be. And so here he created this alien character who's just sort of, I mean, there's the obvious sexual element to him and the pleasure and the no holds barred and no inhibitions and be whatever you want to be and do whatever you want to do.
Exactly, as he says a few times.
Yes.
And I mean, you get a vivid description of the fact that men and women are appealing to him.
Yes, yeah, which you can imagine the 70s when no wonder it was banned in most places. I mean, it must have been such a shock value. Of course, now audiences are less shocked by it, but what hasn't disappeared for me is the enjoyment and the fun of the naughtiness of it all.
Yes, that's what I think everyone remembers.
Yes.
It's a naughty night out at the theater without being caught
without being too naughty,
no danger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you can dress up, you can come and have a lot of fun. But as we said, at the end of the day, it is still a play. It is still a story. And you do want to get to that point after the floor show where there's a sadness.
Very sad.
And you want the audience to feel that. And if you haven't told the story, you run the risk of them not feeling something. And I believe that's a big mistake for the Rocky Horror Show.
You've got to, especially with Frank, Frank's got to get the sympathy of the audience from the beginning. So that when he sings that song, what's the song called?
I'm going home.
You really, it's tear-jerking, actually.
It is. It has to move the audience. And currently, Luke Evans is playing it on Broadway, playing Frankenfurter. He's a beautiful man. He's macho. He's strong. He played Gaston in the film version of Beauty and the Beast. He's got a beautiful voice. And I actually watched a little bit of their rehearsal, and they broke it right down, and they said, "This I'm going home is essentially saying, I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. I know that." Because Riff Raff has said, "We're done.
That's right.
We're gone."
That's right.
And he thinks, "Oh, I'm going home." But I think he also knows they don't mean back to Transylvania. He knows that they mean you're done. They're going to kill him.
Yeah.
So it has to be poignant, and it has to, and it is. It's just such a. There's an example of a simplistic song that just hits you right in the heart. Absolutely. It's so wonderful.
After all that's gone before and all the excitement and all the ups
broken
and downs.
Down, simple.
Just to that. Mm. Oh, right. Now, another song, please, Craig. Yes. Don't Give Up.
I love this song. It's I love it because of obviously what it means about keep on keeping on. And it's got this, this sort of bass line that's kind of got that trundling motion, that almost I think I can kind of motion to it. I love this song because I've never been a massive fan of either of these two as vocalists. They're both a little bit different. Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush. You know, Kate Bush can scream and wail.
Yes, she can.
But she had a few beautiful songs like Babushka and things like that, which I absolutely loved, and Wuthering Heights, obviously. But I love this song for the sentiment, for that beautiful bass line that, that Peter Gabriel created. And it's just always one of my... It's one of my go-to songs if I'm kind of feeling a little bit afraid or a little bit down, or yeah, I think a classic.
Non è questa la mia dimensione, è la mia mente, non è mai in pace, è sempre altrove, tu dove sei, la tua voce dove, senza di te, senza il tuo aiuto, che sarà di me? Invidia o rabbia che sia, qui nel mio cuore non voglio più queste parole. Tu dove sei? Il tuo sorriso dove? Senza di te, senza il tuo amore, che sarà di solverà e alla luce
We heard Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush there, that song Don't Give Up. It was the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, Craig Urbani, who's about to launch into the Rocky Horror Show at Theatre on the Bay. It opens on Saturday the 4th for a long run here, I think, Craig, a fairly long run.
Yes.
Then you go to Johannesburg, then you come back.
Yes, it's set to do the same kind of time frame that Joseph had.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with the Theatre on the Bay being the intimate venue that it is, we are anticipating a lot of people wanting to come and watch the show.
Oh, yes, you will.
Because much like Joseph, perhaps even more so than Joseph, there is the, you know, the show has been around for a long time. It's got its following. It's got ardent fans.
And it's got now the different generations as well.
Of course. There's a lot of youngsters who, and there's, what I love is parents who say, oh, no, we want to bring our kids to come and see this. It was a big part of our lives and we want to introduce them. And most of them know the songs and then they come and see how it all fits into the narrative. So it's set to run for, are we certainly going to be at Theatre in the Bay for the whole of April, the whole of May. We're set to go to Johannesburg for June, July, and then we're there till the end of August, and then we're coming back.
Okay,
don't worry, Cape Town. We'll try and book now, but if you don't get the chance, we'll be back.
Look, it does fill up the show. And are you going to have dress up evenings, or people dress up just normally, don't they?
I think people dress up if they want to, and certainly, I mean, I remember at the Victory back in the day when we had, I think it was Friday night shows became the shows, and people came dressed up, and we used to run 15 minutes longer than other nights because there were the shout outs and but the rules are, there are no rules. It's about people coming. If they want to dress up, we encourage it. If they want to, if they have their favorite shout outs, we encourage those. And the audience in this particular production is very much a part of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
So we invite them all to come and let loose and dress up and have fun.
And do you enjoy that on stage when the audience interferes, for want of a better word?
I love it. I mean, I love it and I hate it because it can be throwing and jarring.
Like unpredictable, you know?
Yes, but that also keeps you on your toes and keeps you quite exciting. And I think Rocky also, you kind of know what shout-outs you're going to get because they have become sort of standardized with the cult following of the film.
Did you ever go to those midnight? Remember they used to have midnight film shows where everyone specifically had their shout outs. They used to get a little kit of newspapers.
You used to get your goodies, your rice,
your
confetti or whatever, and your water pistols for the rain scene. I mean, I was young, a little after that, so I wasn't part of those initial ones. But whenever there have been ones kind of created, I've seized the opportunity, any chance to go and be a part of it.
Now, just the narrator here is based also on Christopher Luscombe's production, where he uses a woman as the narrator as opposed to a man.
Yes.
And it worked well. Was it Kate?
It was Kate.
The last time. And now you've got
Natasha Sutherland.
You've got Natasha Sutherland.
Which is wonderful. I mean, she's a great actor, you know.
Yes, and she's been around, hasn't she?
Everyone knows who she is. No, I played her brother on Scandal for 4 years. We worked together then. Otherwise, I've always known Natasha. We had never done anything together. Of course, the daughter of the late, great Jeffrey Sutherland.
He did amazing work for
theatre, mainly in Natal. But he created some beautiful, he was quite a visionary, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, she's doing a wonderful job. And I think the way that that happened was, it was always a sort of elderly man playing it. And you know, it's got this kind of, the gentleman in the library who's opened the book and he's reading it.
Like Charles Grey in the film, yes.
Absolutely,
yes.
And very straight and played very proper. And then they, with the show traveling around regionally, they started to use celebrities from different places. And so, you know, I've seen Stephen Fry do it, who was absolutely wonderful.
Doing the narrator.
Doing the narrator, which was, he's perfect. You know, you can just imagine that dry, wry sense of humor. But then they started having women do it as well and realizing, oh, it doesn't have to be, you know, the rules are, there are no rules.
Yes.
It's Rocky Horror Show.
Yes.
So we've got Natasha doing a fantastic job of narrator. And Stephen Stead and the cast and everybody keep prepping her for the shout out. So whenever she does it, people are shouting things at her to try and
practice
the comebacks.
Will she handle the comebacks?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And the band this year, someone was telling me you've got an excellent drummer. You said that. Yes.
Extraordinary band. You know, the most important thing when you've got a band like this is that they can follow the musical director, number one, and that they can keep it nice and tight, you know? Because at the end of the day, it's about watching what's happening on stage. And obviously, we need it to be a certain way every night. Obviously, they can't let it sound like that. So it's got to sound like they're rocking out, but with discipline, if you like, within the confines of you know, what the conductor's setting. And we've got, much like with the cast, a lot of young, very talented cast members. We've got a young, very talented band as well. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Kroc is our musical director.
I was just going to ask you who. So then you're in good hands.
Very great hands.
And I just met here at FMR, the young man who's playing Brad.
Yes.
Because you've got some people from Lambda, which has been doing so incredibly well.
Wonderful. I've been so lucky since COVID. The shows that I've done, which was We Will Rock You, Sound of Music, My Fair Lady, and this one have had a lot of the young Lambda graduates in it, and they are extraordinary. What Dwayne Alexander and Anton Leighting have achieved there is amazing. They're teaching these youngsters very well.
Which we saw in Joseph. Which
and
blew,
it's the awakening.
Yes, that's the big one.
The talent and the depth of performance and the layers you get from these young performers. I mean, you know, picture Craig Abani back in 1992 playing Rocky. I had no clue. I was like, when are we going to the pub? You know, going to have a cigarette and a drink. You know, these youngsters are disciplined. They're very mature in how they approach their work. They're very thorough and they're very good.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good. They're there because they want to be there, and they taught well, and they come out with a good work ethic, a lot of talent, and it's honed. It's honed and it's good to go, you know.
It's well, and they've got wonderful things to work with, like the show, the Rocky Horror Show. Oh, isn't it just the best
piece,
thing?
Yeah.
Let's have another piece of music, Craig. And I see Josh Groban lurking here.
I'm just trying to have a little bit of class because I'm on your show. I mean,
oh,
really.
Thank you. Well,
but,
absolutely.
But I love Josh, and I love this. In Her Eyes, it's one of the songs, kind of with my mom in mind, that. You always know, I always know when I'm doing well in my life based on how she looks at me. I can see, you know, when she's very proud or when she's concerned or when I was going through my darker times in my life, when she was quite desperate and very worried about me. And when I heard this song and I actually recorded it for her, not quite as well as Josh Groban does it, you know, you'll hear. But it was a kind of a tribute to her. Because that's when I know kind of where I am in life, if I'm doing good or if I could be doing better.
Il mondo gira con me questa notte. Piccoli passi che faccio con te, seguo il tuo cuore, seguo la luna, così nascosta lontana da me. Il mondo gira con noi questa notte, ah, esistesse lontano da qui. Un posto dove scoprire il mio cuore, sapere se lui può amarti o no, e girerà il cuore mio assieme a te, e girerà. Giri con me questa notte, sei tu che giri lontana da qui, ma sì, io so che tu sei la mia luna, qualcosa mostri, qualcosa no, ci sono strade azzurre nel cielo. Ci sono occhi e il cielo è già lì. Sì, questo credo che siano le stelle. Ah, se potessi fermarmi così e girare.
The rather beautiful voice of Josh Groban. In Her Eyes, the third choice of my guests on People of Note this week, Craig Urban. You must admit, Craig, it's a lovely voice, old Josh.
He's amazing. I mean, when You Raise Me Up came out, everybody, the whole world was, and it became my mother's, one of my mother's favorite songs, which I sang at her 60th, good Lord, at her 60th. But this In Her Eyes just was such a wonderful.
But you were saying just before that how your mother liked that song as well.
Yeah, and that's how you. I was saying that that's how I kind of measure myself. That's the way she looks at me. I know if I'm doing okay or if I must make better life choices.
Okay. So she's still quite strict, your mother?
Oh, she's never been strict. She's just. I always say that from my dad's side came the magic and the madness. It's all the musicality and the talent stuff came from dad. But my mother is what keeps my feet on the ground, what keeps me a good human being. And if she's looking at me, if I look in her eyes and she's proud of me and she's happy with me, I'm doing well.
Will she come and see the Rocky Show?
Oh, yes, she loves it. Yes.
I wanted to ask you then, Craig, what about your vocal training? Because part of the whole thing is that you're a singer, not only an actor, as we remember from Buddy Holly, as well as The Sound of Music and My Fair Lady. Have you had formal training, voice training?
You know, when I was thrown into the bright lights of the West End, I quickly realized that I needed that, because as I said, I wasn't brought up on those classic musicals like Sound of Music and Oklahoma and Seven Brides. You know, I was watching Grease and the Idol Maker and rocking it out in my garage in a band, so I could hold a tune. I could kind of sing. I still to this day I think am more suited to the slightly edgier poppy stuff,
as opposed
to the classic musicals
like Henry Higgins.
Henry Higgins is such a gift because Rex Harrison made it a speak sing.
Yes.
Because he wasn't much of a singer. So now when you play that role, when I went in the first time, Kevin Kroc and Stephen Stitt said, sing less. I said, with pleasure.
Oh, really?
You're not going to have to ask me twice.
Is it easy to do that sing, speak, sing? Because rhythmically, you've got to be absolutely right all the time.
Yes. I mean, you still have to treat it. You still have to be where you have to be in the music. But you can make acting choices. Maybe make acting choices your priority and the singing secondary, which you can't always do in a musical. Sometimes it's very much about the vocal delivery. I loved it. I mean, it just gave me such freedom.
And you, as you said, a gentleman, you can't belt things out in the sound in My Fair Lady, can you?
Well, you have to. You see, for me, what happens sometimes is the singing voice must match the character voice that you're using for the character. You can't suddenly speak as a character in one voice and then suddenly a song comes along and you sing, and it's it's kind of jarring, isn't
it? It'll throw the audience.
Exactly. So it needs to sort of both come from the same place. So like you seamlessly go from I'm speaking into I'm singing, and we shouldn't really even as an audience notice the difference. We just go along with the narrative. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of key, and it was beautiful in My Fair Lady because I stole it from Rex. I watched him in the movie, and he actually had a very high, beautiful top-end voice, but he just didn't trust himself as a singer. He made incredible choices that I just tried to steal.
But yet, it still looked like you. I mean, it was you doing Henry Higgins.
Absolutely.
I certainly didn't get the impression you were copying Rex.
No. We're sort of vastly different in terms of our vocal quality as well. Mm. So it would have been silly for me to try and emulate him, perhaps to the point that I'm trying to emulate Tim Curry as Frank, because that sits in my voice very comfortably. Tim Curry's, it's sort of back in the throat. It's quite a guttural kind of sound. It's almost got a little bit of air coming through it, and it's easier for me to do. If I'd got stuck in trying to sound too much like Rex Harrison, I would have landed in trouble. Mm-hmm. It's all about finding that balance in the rehearsal room with the help of your musical director and Stephen Stead, and we had the same, those two names are on this production that we're doing right now. So, I mean, I was in good hands then, I'm in good hands now.
And the singing of Frankfurter, there are a few belting out songs there, aren't there?
You know, here it is a rock show. It is a
rock show.
Horror
we must
show.
Remember so, that.
So there's a lot more edge, there's a lot more punch. As I say, the range is suitable. The range is wonderful. And Tim Curry, to a point as well, chose his places where he sustained notes and really sang it, and where he kind of just made it more a sort of lilting acting. Don't dream it, be here. He sort of hints at the melody instead of hitting it sort of bang on.
That's part of his incredible charm.
And God bless him for it. I'm going for it, doing my best.
I'll watch out for Tim Curry
signs. You must see Tim Curryisms.
Craig, your next piece is from Rent, the musical Rent. Tell me, Seasons of Love, tell me about this and why you've chosen it.
You know, Rent was a strange show. When it came out, there was a lot of people who loved it and people who hated it. And it had some questionable music in it. But this song, Seasons of Love, talks about 521,600 minutes. That's how many we have in a year. And I love the sentiment of making it count. It's all those cliches. It's not about it's not about counting the moments, but how many moments take your breath away, or making every minute count, or making every second count, being present, living for the now. And we only have 525,600 minutes to do that in every year.
I shall remember that.
Yeah, I love it.
Here's music from Rent.
Seasons of love. for in times that he cried, in bridges he burned, or the way that she died.
It's time now to sing out, though the story never ends. Let's celebrate, remember a year in the life of friends. Remember love, love.
Music there from the original cast recording of Rent, the musical Rent, Seasons of Love. And we're talking to Craig Urbani, playing the role of Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Show, which has just opened at Theatre on the Bay and runs actually for quite a while here in Cape Town till the 31st, and then you're off to Johannesburg.
Then we go to Joburg. It's look, I mean, it's you know, we're doing it in the more intimate theatre, and from what I've seen from ticket sales, demand is high. People are going to want to come and see it, so it's a nice long run, much like Joseph was.
Yes, but you're coming back after Johannesburg, as we said earlier.
Yes, we're going to come back, as we mentioned, because people are going to want to come more than once, I think. I'm going to say, I'm going to dress up more daring the second time.
Yeah. Exactly, because they get their confidence. Exactly. But on that subject, Craig, I wanted to ask you, I mean, as a heterosexual man, how does it feel to have all the hair shaved off your body, have makeup applied every night, wear fishnets, and that tight leather stuff?
Yeah.
How does it make you feel? Be careful how you answer.
No, I love it.
Oh dear.
It made me, the last time we did it, and I'm feeling it now again, because we've got all our new costumes, and I'm wearing the same heels I had before, which were specially made for me in Germany. It's very empowering. It's very liberating. It's a lot of fun, and it's what's required for this role, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it a lot. I mean, look, I don't enjoy de-hairing myself. Thankfully, I'm not a very hairy man, but that's interesting. And the makeup, they kept threatening me with, you've got to do it yourself this time, you've got to do it yourself this time, but I've roped somebody in. I've got the wonderful talents of Lucia making me, I mean, it helps so much to feel like him,
His
character. It's a part of it, and I really enjoy it, and it's empowering.
How long does it take you to get ready from when you arrive at the theatre till when you go on stage?
I think I could do it in a half an hour.
Oh,
I think.
Okay.
But 45 minutes is probably better, but we always give ourselves more than that, because you never know.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid I ladder my stocking.
Yes.
Although ladders are allowed in this.
Sure they are, to make it look just slightly more kind
a little
of,
bit edgy and worn.
Yeah. And these heels, what are they settled about?
Well, you know, I was worried about the heels when I did it before, but these were made for me, and they're not massively high, probably looking about four inches, maybe.
Yeah. That's high enough.
It's high enough, and it does make a difference. You know, when you're on them, you really do feel like you sort of standing on a slope. But I got used to them. I remember last time when I was rushing out to get coffee for everybody, I was saying, who wants a coffee? Who wants a coffee? And I was sort of running out the door, and Kate Normington said, Craig, I don't think the heels are going to be a problem, because I was running down to go and get my coffee in the heels.
Oh,
and they all said, I think he's getting comfortable, maybe too comfortable.
Yeah. Oh, there you are, you see. You must get sent up quite a lot about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, I love it.
But
love
are the shoes comfortable?
They actually are. They actually aren't uncomfortable. Every time you haven't worn them for a while and you put them back on, and I had the same thing now, after the first 2 days of rehearsal, you develop something somewhere, a little blister or a bit of an irritation somewhere. And then I just have to plaster that. And it's so odd, because once that's done, it never comes back in that same spot. So it's almost like it just bugs you in one place. And then that goes, and now I'm very comfortable.
Okay. I was just thinking as well, when you were asked to do it the second time, did you think, oh, no, or oh, yay?
Oh, yay.
Was it Oh Yeah?
Oh, absolutely. This, look, I mean, it's, as I said to you, this is a, something I've been playing in my head and thinking about for so many years. And to get a stab at that character is such a gift. To get another stab at that character is even more of a gift.
And you've got a long run this time as well.
I'm very excited to play Frank again.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I saw you the last time, and it was here at Artscape. And as we said earlier, at Theatre on the Bay, there's a much more intimate quality to it, isn't it?
There's going to be power and intimacy coming off that stage, and I think that's the combination that makes – that's what's made this the success that it is.
Yeah.
You're going to be along for the ride on this one. It's not something you're watching. It's something you're feeling.
Richard O'Brien must be feeling – must be overwhelmed by just how successful this is worldwide for all these years.
Absolutely. I mean, he sort of says, well, you know, it's just a simplistic little story, and I wrote these songs, and I think he is as surprised as everybody as to how well it's done. Yeah. And it was his birthday recently, and we all sang happy birthday to him, and there's a show that they're doing it on Broadway now, as I mentioned, with Luke Evans playing Frankenfurter. There's a tour happening in the UK, so it's going strong, and I think he's loving that.
May I ask you what you're going to do after this, or is this all a bit secret?
Well, no, I've spoken about it. We're doing Oliver.
Oh, you did mention that.
Yes. We're doing Oliver, and I'm playing the baddie.
That's right.
I can't wait.
Dear me, in both The Sound of Music and, well, in My Fair Lady, weren't the baddie. I mean, because Higgins was not really a bad person.
No, I mean, that
a bully and all that.
Absolutely, yeah. Perhaps a bit sexist and misogynistic, but the trick was to love him in spite of those things. Whereas Bill Sykes, we don't love for any. Well, maybe we should still have empathy for him.
Well, if I'm doing
my job right.
So it's on. This is the Rocky Horror Show, Peter Tureen's production. It's on at Theatre on the Bay right through until the 31st of May, but then it does come back later in the year, as Joseph did. And Craig Urbani has been my guest. He's singing that wonderful role of Frankenfurter. What's your last piece, Craig, before I allow you to go?
Somewhere Only We Know by Keane. This man has the most beautiful voice, and I just thought for this station, this is a very suitable song because of the beautiful melody and the beautiful vocal, and it's quite a moving song. Yeah.
Good. Well, Craig, be there. What does he say?
Don't dream it.
Don't dream it.
Be it. There we go.
Enjoy. Thanks, Craig.
See you there. Thank you, guys.
I'm getting
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.